It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Hello. Welcome, one and all. It is March 25th, 2021. And that means... And it's 1900 UTC. So that means... Let's get going. I repeat the intro every time, and it's... I know it, but I just can't stop. Maybe I'll just... turn the music... Just get the plain music without the rest of it. Anyway. Oh, boy. I have had quite a busy day already, and... I've been stressed out, but one of my good friends at work was able to talk to them a little bit, even though they're in China, and kind of calm me down. And then a letter I wrote, I got a response back that was very nice. And so hopefully I'll calm down. World news. That's right. It's time to start the way we always start, with the world news. So we're going to start off here. EU export restrictions on COVID shots would be lose-lose situation, says a Pfizer executive. European Union export restrictions on COVID-19 vaccines would result in a lose-lose situation for everyone, including EU members, a Pfizer executive said, a day after the bloc tightened oversight of shot deliveries beyond its borders. The EU's action would give it greater scope to block shipments to countries with higher inoculation rates, such as Britain, or which are not sharing doses that they produce. The specter of export restrictions has many concerned, given the global nature of vaccine production, in which shots have hundreds of ingredients sourced in dozens of countries. New roadblocks for shots or raw materials could disrupt pandemic-fighting efforts. So, we've observed these recent developments with concern, Sabine Bruckner, Swiss County Manager for Pfizer, said at a Swiss government press conference on Thursday. So, we'll see what's going on. Pfizer's worried, so that's kind of worth something. But anyway, fingers crossed. There's a lot of stuff going on with COVID. You know, lots of people still hurting. From The Guardian, we've got a story headlined, "I'm begging you, get the vaccine. Pockets of fear emerge in Serbia." Serbia's most famous citizen, the tennis champion Novak Djokovic, has been vocally cautious about vaccines. A government advisor on the pandemic told the media last March that COVID-19 exists only on Facebook. When cases of measles spiked 3 years ago, authority blamed the influence of a powerful anti-vaccination lobby. Serbia is an unlikely candidate for continental Europe's most vaccinated nation so far, but since January, the Western Balkans nation has raced ahead of most of the world, delivering more than 31 jabs for every 100 people, according to statistics from Our World in Data, leaving countries such as Germany at 13 doses per 100 people and Canada 10.8 doses in its wake. Its success has illuminated the pockets of the country where suspicion of the vaccine is proving stubborn, forcing Serbian authorities to confront a question that might await others in the Balkans and Eastern Europe, where polls show that hesitancy to get the jab is a significant force. Once supply of doses outstrips demand, how do you convince skeptical communities to be vaccinated? Fewer than 8 vaccinations per 100 people have been administered in Novi Pazar, the largest city in Sanjak, a rural region and center for the country's Bosniak minority, despite at least 4 different vaccines on offer. "I think it's too early to say the vaccine is safe," says Simon Martinovic, 20, on the streets of Tutin, a town in Sanjak. "Around the world, there are lots of examples of side effects, and there is also the question of which is the most effective. In my area, people are afraid." So it's very scary here indeed. I like to skip to the end whenever the story's a little long. An epidemiologist is named Zoran Radvanovic, and it says, "It was important for the regime to show that Serbia has more vaccines than other countries, but at the same time, we've neglected the crucial part about educating people about the vaccine. Education about vaccine before mass vaccination is like artillery during war. You start breaking the enemy's line with artillery. In this case, that would be education. But this has not been done. This has not been the case in Serbia." So, fingers crossed for Serbia. But hey, at least they've got the vaccine, which is a good start. Or at least I think it's a good start. So we'll see how that goes. Let's see, do we have any more COVID? I don't think so. I think those are our main COVID stories. Let's go down into Africa real quick. I've got a block of stories from Africa that I think are being overshadowed because President Biden, the President of the United States, is giving a press conference, and there's other stuff going on in the U.S., but it's like the rest of the world's still spinning, y'all. Turn on your local TV news if you want to hear, you know, what happened with Britney Spears or whatever. News to me, we look at all sorts of news, but usually try and go to some of the more uncommon but still important stuff. Anyway, from Al Jazeera, we've got a block here. Libya demands mercenary pullout. Syrian militia is on its way. Libya's new unity government has demanded the immediate withdrawal of all foreign mercenaries ahead of a year-end elections in a call backed by the visiting top diplomats of France, Germany, and Italy. The North African country descended into chaos after dictator Muammar Gaddafi was toppled and killed in a 2011 NATO-backed uprising, resulting in multiple forces vying for power. Fighting only came to a halt last year, and a formal ceasefire in October was followed by the establishment of a unity government led by interim Prime Minister Abdul Hamid Dbeibah. The presence of an estimated 20,000 foreign fighters and mercenaries on Libya's territory is seen as a threat to the UN-backed transition leading to December 24th elections. So this is exciting. I'm happy for Libya. I hope that they get some peace. The way that Gaddafi was deposed is kind of a bit questionable. African unity and the unity of the African continent amongst the countries there is really important. And it seems like often the world, you know, the UN or NATO or the United States somehow decides that it's time to go in for some regime change anytime there starts to be any kind of progress on that front. So, yeah, anyway, it's just something I noticed, and so I'm excited for Libya. I hope they get make progress. In Ethiopia's Tigray conflict, observers from Medicines Sans Frontières, I guess Doctors Without Borders, staff say they witnessed the extrajudicial killing of four civilians by Ethiopian soldiers in Tigray region earlier this week. An MSF team, that's Mike Sierra Foxtrotter, Medicines Sans Frontières, an MSF team and two public minibuses were stopped by soldiers in the aftermath of an apparent ambush on an army convoy on a main road on Tuesday. The passengers had to leave the buses. The four men were separated from women and shot. Officials say the medical aid charity's allegations will be investigated. No person, including serving soldiers, is above the law, Ethiopia's embassy in London told the BBC. The conflict in northern Ethiopia erupted in November when the government launched an offensive to oust the region's ruling party from power after its fighters captured federal military bases in the Tigray region, or in Tigray. The Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, had a massive fallout with Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed over the future of Ethiopia's ethnically based federal system and its role in government. So, this is pretty big news, or pretty exciting, a lot of stuff happening here. The question for a lot of people is, are the atrocities being investigated? Mr. Abe has promised to bring to account soldiers found to have committed crimes. The conflict not only involves the military and regional fighters, but has also drawn in troops from neighboring Eritrea as well as other militias. All have been accused of human rights abuses. We mentioned that yesterday, earlier this week, that Eritrean fighters, the government finally admitted Eritrean fighters were getting involved. Ethiopia is bumping and jumping right now. It seems like I don't see there's any end for conflict for a little bit. Mozambique military has launched an offensive after an ISIL attack, or ISIL. Fighting around the strategic Mozambique town of Palma entered a second day on Thursday as ISIL-linked fighters occupied and ransacked it despite French energy giant Total claiming it was secure. Mozambique's government confirmed the town in its northernmost province of Cabo Delgado and about 10 kilometers from gas developments worth $60 billion came under a three-pronged attack on Wednesday, and the security forces moved in to establish order. The attack came shortly after French oil giant Total announced plans to resume construction at the nearby site of a $20 billion offshore gas project. Defense Ministry spokesman Omar Saranga said Mozambique's security forces, which is abbreviated SDS, like Sierra Delta Sierra, were pursuing the enemy's movement and working tirelessly to restore security and order. So we'll see what's going on there. Mozambique is, so we were talking about, what was it, the place with the Tigre? Is that Ethiopia? I just had it on, yeah, Ethiopia. So Ethiopia is on the far west, is on the east side, eastern Africa, and Eritrea is to the north, but to its south, it's bordered on its on the south east side by, yeah, you guessed it, Mozambique. So this is very interesting. Looks like that looks like Ethiopia. That's one of the problems with the maps on Al Jazeera and some of these other sites is they really expect their readers to know geography. And for me, a dumb American, it's like, where's Africa? What country is that? And so sometimes it's embarrassing. But yeah, it looks like Mozambique's like the neighboring country. And that's where this oil project's going on. But don't worry, we're still in Africa. We got one more story. Nigeria is cracking down on Bitcoin, echoes a global crypto conundrum. So this is from Lagos. When the Central Bank of Nigeria issued a circular in earlier February warning banks and financial institutions that facilitating payments for cryptocurrency exchanges is prohibited and that they needed to identify and close accounts associated with them, it set the country's crypto community alight. I was in Danfo, a yellow public transport bus that operates in Lagos, heading home when my phone started buzzing with WhatsApp notifications regarding the CBN ban on cryptocurrency transactions, said David Akinwale, a 25-year-old financial analyst who trades in cryptocurrency. It was really disappointing and sad. While other countries are embracing the use of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, Nigeria is doing the reverse. This week, a representative for Nigeria's central bank chief, Goodwin Emefiele, reportedly sought to clarify the February 5th directive, telling reporters that it was not aimed at discouraging people from trading in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but served to enforce orders in place since 2017 banning crypto transactions in the country's banking sector. But the 2017 directive did not prohibit crypto exchanges from using banking and payment channels. It simply required banks and financial institutions to ensure that their crypto exchange customers have effective anti-money laundering and anti-terrorism tools, financial controls in place. The backlash and confusion echo a crypto drama unfolding around the world as virtual currencies like Bitcoin grow in popularity and scale new heights during a time of unprecedented financial uncertainty. So, interesting. Nigeria is Africa's largest economy. It's the most populous country and home to one of the youngest populations in the world. Throw in a burgeoning tech sector, and it's easy to see how Nigeria has become the continent's largest Bitcoin market by trading volume, according to usefultulips.org. So this is pretty wild. It's very interesting. Bitcoin's pretty cool. But it does have a big economic impact, and it's pretty easy to scam people with it, so see how that goes. All right. Let's see. What else do we got? We got a couple more. We got two or three more stories, and I think we're going to have a song too, so don't worry. All right. So first up, Israeli-owned ship hit by missile in suspected Iranian attack. So a cargo ship owned by an Israeli company was damaged by a missile in the Arabian Sea on Thursday in what was suspected to be an Iranian attack, an Israeli security official said. The official, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said the ship was on its way from Tanzania to India and was able to continue its voyage after the attack. The official did not provide further details. According to Israel's Ynet news website, the ship sailing under a Liberian flag did not sustain serious damage, and Channel 12 News reported the ship is owned by XT Management, that's X-Ray Tango Management, based in the port city of Haifa. Reuters could not reach officials at the company for comment, and Israeli government officials had no official comment. The vehicle carrier MV Helios Ray was hit between the night of February 25th and morning of February 26th by a blast above the waterline that a U.S. official said ripped holes in both sides of its hull. So this is the previous one that happened. Iran denied involvement at the time. We strongly reject this accusation, said Saeed Katbazadeh, spokesman for the foreign ministry in Tehran. So, there we go. All right. Let's keep on going. What else is happening? Well, U.S. and Britain blacklist Myanmar military-controlled companies. The United States and Britain imposed sanctions on conglomerates controlled by Myanmar's military on Thursday following the general's February 1st coup and deadly crackdown, with Washington calling it a response to abhorrent violence and abuses. The U.S. Treasury Department said its sanctions targeted Myanmar economic
Get the
holdings.
News over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah, finance news isn't that exciting, is it? We'll get to song in just a minute or two. Don't worry. So the Treasury said its sanctions are going to target Myanmar Economic Holdings Public Company Limited and Myanmar Economic Corporation Limited. Britain imposed similar sanctions on MEHL, which is the Holdings Company Limited, citing the Myanmar military's serious human rights violations. Representatives for the two entities, which control big sections of the Myanmar economy, had no immediate comment on when Reuters reported on Wednesday the sanctions were expected. Thursday's actions were the most significant by far against the business interests of Myanmar's military, which ranged from beer and cigarettes to telecom, tires, mining and real estate. Shortly after the announcement, the State Department condemned the continued use of lethal force by authorities in Myanmar over the weekend, resulted in the deaths of at least 27 people, including several children. The designation prohibits American companies or citizens from trading or conducting financial transactions with those listed. So if people can't talk them down, maybe we can freeze them out without having to send guys in helicopters over there. All right, so what else is happening? Well, dozens have been detained in Belarus as it marks Freedom Day with new protests. Belarusian security forces detained dozens of people on Thursday as protesters answered a call by opposition figures to ramp up demonstrations against veteran President Alexander Lukashenko to pressure him to resign. The rights group Viasana 96, or Spring 96 as it's translated, said at least 45 people had been detained, while footage circulated by local media showed isolated incidents of protesters being grabbed or chased down the street by police. The authorities had moved police buses, water cannon, and prisoner vans into the center of the capital, Minsk, in anticipation of the protests of the country's unofficial Freedom Day. Protesters, some carrying red and white opposition flags, marched through the streets while car horns honked their horns in solidarity. Lukashenko, age 66, has faced the biggest challenge to his nearly 27-year rule since protesters took the streets after he was declared the winner last August, which they say was rigged. So, this is, we'll see where this goes. Just know Belarus is still not in a good place. The crackdown has caused a diplomatic row between Belarus and Poland that accelerated after the arrest of two Poles this week. Warsaw on Thursday threatened new sanctions in retaliation. So, speaking of that, it's time for MGMT, kids.
Thank you.
right. That was MGMT, 2 minutes worth of kids. Song always gets, I enjoy that song a lot. So thank you so much for listening. You're listening to Anon Radio. It's powered by SDF, the Public Access Unix System, and it is amazing. Just go to sdf.org, that's Sierra Delta Foxtrot.org, and you can find all the instructions, or just SSH over as whatever your desired username is at sdf.org, and you can go through the setup process. It's really fun and easy, and then you get to participate in COM. COM chat's how we chat during the show. Just log in, type COM, press G for go to, and then Anon Radio, all one word, all lowercase, and you'll get to our room. And what good or what fun is chat? Well, during the news it's fun, but it really blows up during the Dubious Goals Committee with Tope, which is a show that happens every single day at 1930 UTC. So just tune in and unwind, relax. It's a good time. So definitely stick around for that. All right, so we've got about 9 minutes, and we have about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 13 stories. So we're probably not going to make it through all of them. So let's go through what we can. Let's finish up the world news real quick. The ship that was in the Suez Canal yesterday is still there. It's still blocking it, and it may take weeks to free it. The salvage company said that it could take weeks to free it, as officials stopped all ships entering the channel on Thursday in a new setback for global trade. It's a 400-meter-long boat, and it's as long as the Empire State Building is high, and it's blocking transit in both directions. So 8 tug ships were working to move the vessel, which got stuck diagonally across the single-lane southern stretch of the canal on Tuesday morning amid high winds and a dust storm. So a total of 206 large container ships, tankers carrying oil and gas, and bulk vessels hauling grain have backed up at either end of the canal, so creating one of the worst shipping jams seen for years. And this is on top of disruption of world trade already caused in the past year by COVID-19, and the fact that shipping containers are like near impossible to get to. It's like a lot of them, they're not where they're supposed to be. So there's a lot of places with a ton of empty containers and a lot of places with no containers. And it's a trip. So anyway, good luck, shipping world. If you're shipping anything or trying to buy anything, yeah, it might be more expensive soon. All right. And if you'll remember, you remember Navalny. He's the guy that was very strongly opposed to Putin. And then they tried to poison him a couple times. Now he's in prison. Well, jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny said on Thursday that being woken up by a guard every hour during the night amounted to torture, and that his appeal for treatment for acute back and leg pain has been refused in a deliberate attempt to run him down. Navalny is one of the Putin's most prominent critics, made the allegation in 2 official appeals to authorities, which he passed to his lawyers, who visited him at the IK2, that's India Kilo-2, Corrective Penal Colony, 100 kilometers east of Moscow. The Federal Penitentiary Service has said earlier on Thursday that Navalny's health was stable and satisfactory. His lawyers, who were denied access to him the previous day, disputed that after visiting him, saying he was in bad shape and needed urgently to see an outside doctor. The 44-year-old opposition politician said in his appeals that prison authorities had refused his request last month for a civilian doctor to visit him, despite excruciating back pain and numbness in his leg. So, we shall see how that goes. I don't know. I wonder if you heard that. All right. Yeah. So that's going on in Russia. And so let's do a few. This is one story I wanted to break the tension a little bit. I didn't get it early enough in the show, but this is fun. A road typo stops an Italian town and lightens lockdown. So this is from this is in Italy, and this is from The Guardian. A typo in a road marking has caused amusement among residents of a town near Rome, helping to break the monotony of the coronavirus lockdown. Workers freshening up markings of street at an intersection on Via Regina Margherita in the beach town of Sabaudia painted SOPT, or Sierra Oscar Tango Papa, instead of STOP, Sierra Tango Oscar Papa, in bold letters. A photo of the error was posted by Giada Gervasi, the mayor of Sabaudia, on her Facebook page, inviting ironic comments, including suggestions that the typo should be maintained as a tourist attraction. Gervasi was quick to distance the town hall from the misprint, writing on Facebook that the company in charge made a mistake and promising a quick correction. SOP will return to STOP, she wrote. It's a small mistake that maybe made you smile. Indeed it did. This error has made us laugh. We needed it now, wrote Mario Chiarotto beneath the mayor's post. Some suggest it was perhaps an early April Fool's Day joke, while others urge the typo to be maintained. So this is pretty funny, but I thought that was kind of a lighthearted little thing. All right, so let's do some tech stories, and then I will hope, you know, maybe we'll finish tech news, and then we'll be out of time, and we won't have to talk about boring U.S. news, or at least U.S. news that's kind of not as much fun. All right, so Amazon denies workers peeing in bottles, and it's sparking questions and backlash. To paraphrase one of the most iconic tweets of the past 10 years, Amazon's recent denial about employees not being forced to urinate in bottles at work has people asking a lot of questions already answered by the denial. In a tweet sent last night, the official Amazon news account for the behemoth corporation, whose CEO Jeff Bezos saw his personal net worth increase by $70 billion during the pandemic, wrote, "You don't really believe the peeing in bottles thing, do you? If that were true, nobody would work for us." Yeah, right. The truth is that we have over 1 million incredible employees around the world who are proud of what they do and have great wages and health care from day one. In under 12 hours, the tweet has been quote-tweeted 9,000 times. For those unversed in the dark Twitter metric arts, that's not good. Okay. This tweet has absolutely completely convinced that the peeing in bottle things happened and probably worse. Oh, that's what somebody said about it. Thousands of gleeful and mocking rejoinders to Amazon's post came with good reason. The company is currently in the midst of a public relations battle with a group of workers in Alabama attempting to unionize. In an attempt to forestall such a historic move, Amazon's been on a campaign to just illustrate just how well, in fact, they treat their workers. It doesn't seem to be working. Numerous high-profile labor organizers, celebrities, and politicians have joined the side of the striking workers. Bernie Sanders is set to travel to Alabama on Friday to meet with them. The botched PR response in question in this case came as a reply to a tweet from another lawmaker, the Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan, who himself was responding to jabs thrown by another Amazon executive, Dave Clark. Clark had attempted to draw a snarky analogy between his company and the success records of Sanders in his home state, saying, "I often say we are the Bernie Sanders of employers, but that's not quite right because we actually deliver a progressive workplace." Yeah, right. So anyway, this article then has a whole bunch of tweets to kind of point out how silly it is. But yeah, so there you go. Amazon, full on 100% denial about how horrible its working conditions are, or maybe just trying to get the world to doubt it. So this was Mad Scientist straight out of the Simpsons show. The U.S. should establish a multi-million dollar research program on solar geoengineering, according to the country's National Science Academy. In a report, it recommends funding $100 million to $200 million over 5 years to better understand the feasibility of interventions to dim the sun, the risk of harmful unintended consequences, and how such technology could be governed in an ethical way. The National Academies of Sciences said cutting fossil fuel emissions remained the most urgent and important action to tackle the climate crisis, but it said the worrying slow progress on climate action meant all options needed to be understood. Outdoor experiments should be allowed if only if they provide critical knowledge that cannot be obtained by other means, said the report, and the research program should not be designed to advance future deployment of these interventions. Harvard University is hoping to gain imminent approval from an independent committee for test flights, which are opposed by environmental groups. So, the report considers three types of solar engineering to allow more heat to escape the Earth's atmosphere: injecting tiny reflective particles into the stratosphere to block sunlight, using the particles to make low-lying clouds over the oceans more reflective, and thinning high-altitude cirrus clouds. Major volcanic eruptions are already known to cool the climate by pumping particles high into the atmosphere. Proponents of geoengineering argue the impacts of global heating could be so great that every option to limit these must be explored. Opponents argue that such research increases the risk that such technologies could be deployed, perhaps by rogue states, instead of cutting emissions. Critics also warn that solar geoengineering could cause damage such as crop failures and would need to be maintained to avoid a sudden hike in temperature unless carbon emissions fall rapidly. So, pretty wild, I think. We're just about out of time. It is Thursday, March 25th, and I'll be back tomorrow on Friday. Thank you so much for tuning in, and see you then. Talk to you later. Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.